affiliates head on with Bob Kincaid in 1 minute. Mark? Affiliates head on with Bob Kincaid in 30 seconds. Mark.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Good evening. I think officially we're back to normal now. The holidays are over and done with. We can get back to the business at hand. To wit, staying on top of crime, corruption, skullduggery, outright evil. You know, the Bush administration. And it would be improper not to begin the show tonight with at least a mention of the ongoing horror and tragedy in Upshur County, West Virginia. It gets a little more similar each day to, other nightmares in West Virginia. I couldn't help noticing in today's paper this little blurb. In regard to the story, several miners with blackened faces stood with shell-shocked expressions across from the mine Monday afternoon. They talked to fellow miners and family members. Listen carefully, this is the good part. But were told by company officials not to speak with the media. You get that? They were forbidden from speaking to the media. Hey, look, Ma! It's the bad old days when the coal companies could tell you who you could and could not associate with, isn't it? You see, these men don't have union representation, so if the mine boss comes up and says, "Boy! Don't you be talking to none of them reporters, boy!" You know what? If you want to keep on feeding your family, you make sure that you don't talk to any of those nasty reporters. That's how it goes. And of course, it's reminiscent, isn't it? Now, people outside West Virginia won't know my reference, so a little bit of background's probably appropriate. In the early 70s, what was it, 1972? The Buffalo Creek disaster? When the Pittston Coal Company either murdered or destroyed an entire community, and when one of their this was just a little one. This wasn't like the big ones they build today. This was just a few million gallon sludge and filth and toxic waste dam that the coal company had up at the head of the holler. It gave way and left a trail of death and destruction and devastation that is remembered unto this day, O Lord. And what was the first response of our good, godly, upstanding, righteous Republican governor back then? What was Arch Moore's first response? Arch Moore, who went on to do prison time because he was busy taking money from the same coal companies that were murdering West Virginians? What was Arch Moore's first act? Arch Moore tried to forbid the press from going in to the disaster area on the theory that he didn't want no disinformation getting out. You think I'm kidding. People living outside West Virginia think I'm joking. I'm not. And of course, now, 34 years later or so, well, Arch is gone. Oh, he's still breathing out and breathing in again, but he's pretty much disappeared from our collective consciousness, even though it was he who started the wreckage that became our workers' compensation crisis in West Virginia. It was he who started the sad downward slide of any respect for government in this state. It was he who extorted bribes from coal companies in exchange for things like, you know, lowered compensation rates and turning a blind eye to the kind of mismanagement that led to the Buffalo Creek disaster. Yeah, that's all gone now. And now his little girl, his precious baby daughter, Shelley, who looks not so much like her own person, but like her daddy in a bad wig with cheap lipstick. Shelley. Well, Shelley is in the halls of power. Shelley Moore, the apple that has fallen not too far from the tree, had to get up and get herself involved in the public hand-wringing over Upshur County. Hell, I didn't even know that was her district. Well, my bad. But she gave an interview, I guess it was a phone interview, to National Public Radio this morning, and after talking about how it is such a compelling story, how coal mining is so generational in West Virginia, why there's a young man whose daddy's trapped in there who's getting ready to go to work in one of the other mines. And I just think it's compelling. And then finally, the interviewer from NPR, and I forget her name, I'm sorry, asked her a simple question. It looks like there have been an absolute boatload of fines and safety violations at this mine where the miners are trapped. Looks like there's been a whole bunch of them. Congressman Capito, what do you think about that?
I think that we need to investigate and determine where these violations occurred, how, what, when, and if they played into the accident. I mean, I'm concerned about that most definitely. And we'll have to see where that investigation brings us.
How, when, why, what, where? Why, Shelley, you should have been a journalist. You know all the right questions. How, what, when, where, why, who, and how much, baby, how much? How much? But I'm concerned. Horse hockey, she's concerned. That nasty woman, the last thing she was concerned about was the next check she was getting from Tom DeLay. That was her concern. But you'll notice, you know, she couldn't get, could she come out and say, well, you know, doggone, you know, 46 violations in a one-month inspection? Why were they mining coal here? No, Shelley couldn't say anything like that, because who finances Shelley's campaign? Come on, it's easy. You know the answer. Shelley Moore Capito's campaign is financed, honey, by big coal. That's right, coal. It keeps the lights on in West Virginia's funeral homes. Coal, sunshine. Black gold. West Virginia tea cakes. And ain't nobody going to Beverly Hills in an old beat-up pickup truck. Because the coal bosses own our coal. And what's the old line from Big Bad John? Or 16 tons, sorry. We owe our coal, we owe our souls to the company store. And we still do. They just happen to get away with can't get away with paying us in scrip anymore. But yeah, Shelley Moore, Your daddy's proud of you tonight, honey. He's just so proud. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You put your keys between your knuckles. You walk in well-lit areas. Stay clear of parked vans. Someone approaches you and you cross to the other side of the street. Your cell phone is ready. The numbers for help saved on speed dial. You lock the door behind you. Once, twice, maybe three times. Now you feel safe, secure. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not making healthy choices, you could be one of the nearly 2 out of 3 women killed by cancer, diabetes, heart disease, or stroke. So eat right, get active, don't smoke, see your doctor, and live. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at 1-866-399-6789 or visit us at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
Hey, have you got a minute? I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The man ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Miners and mine operators understand the dangers inherent in working at a mine site. They also know how to avoid those hazards, but will they do it? Hello, I'm Bob Friend with the Mine Safety and Health Administration. Many recent fatalities in the mining industry have resulted from bad safety decisions. For example, one victim fell from an elevated platform because he was not wearing a safety line. Tragedies like this don't have to happen if everyone in the mining workplace thinks about the job and makes the right decision. Safety begins with you. If you're about to perform electrical work, lock out and tag out before you start the work. Make the right decision. If you're a truck driver, you can choose whether to wear the seat belt. Make the right decision. MSHA's message to you is make the right decision in the mining workplace. Decide to be safe. Thank you for listening.
Last night, off in the distance, swore I heard train whistle blow. Something inside made me listen and want it to be so. By now, I should be past it. Common sense says I should know. It was just distant memory, and some things I can't let go.
Welcome back. 19 minutes after the hour. What do you think of that? What I was talking about at the very beginning. The company told the miners that they couldn't speak to the media. Of course, if you had yourself a union, and the company told you you couldn't speak to the media, you could tell them, well, Buster, why don't you look in the collective bargaining agreement and we'll find out whether or not I can speak to the media. But you can't have... No, that doesn't work if you don't have a union. doesn't work at all, does it? First Amendment? I had a little road trip I had to take today, and had the misfortune, you know, it's the only thing that's on between noon and three. I caught a little bit of dear old, you know, the oxymoron, Flush Flemball. Caught a little bit of him talking about how the McCain-Feingold Act was really the real problem with, and we'll talk about it later, dear old Jack Abramoff. Can you do that to Abram? But said, you know, McCain-Feingold is, you know, by putting this bill into law, why, my goodness, we have stomped on the First Amendment rights of people, of corporations and public interest, special interest groups, and how dare they tell someone that they can't run a commercial about a candidate within 30 or 60 days of an election? My friends, this is an atrocious attack on the First Amendment. You get it? Telling a great big corporation of America that it can't smear a political candidate just because it, you know, hates their guts. Not over the issues, but just because they're not quite hatefully Republican enough to suit them, you know, in other words, Democrat. Telling them that they can't do that is somehow a violation of the First Amendment. But meanwhile, the International Coal Group, headed by billionaire investment banker Wilbur Ross. Now, his thugs can come along to the miners and say, boy, don't you be talking to them reporters. Don't you be talking about all the safety violations what we done had down here in this godforsaken hole. Don't you be doing that now, or we'll fire your rear end. And you'll never work in this business again. Yeah, really. They were told by the company not to speak with reporters. Why do you suppose that the company doesn't want them speaking to reporters? Why does any company not want the bright light of day to shine upon it? Why is it that this and most other corporations have the same feelings about light that vampires have about sunshine? You know, as the people who are so willing to support domestic spying by the president are fond of saying, well, I don't mind if he spies on me. I ain't got nothing to hide. Well, what does ICG have to hide? You think maybe ICG would rather that people didn't talk about the fact that they bought Anchor West Virginia Energy when the company was in bankruptcy? And that they have sucked as much life out of it as they can? Oh, Wilbur Ross, our buddy Wilbur Ross. See, I couldn't make that noise if it wasn't a real newspaper. Wilbur L. Ross, Jr., oh dear boy, said, it is a horrible thing. As you know, we have an extremely good safety record. We have gotten a lot of awards. Now, he said that before he could get around to say, oh, by the way, our heart goes out to the men and their families. We're doing everything we can to recover them as quickly as possible. Note the use of the word. Think back to 9/11. In the early days, it was a rescue operation, but then they started talking about a recovery operation. You don't recover living people, you rescue them. In Wilbur L. Ross Jr.'s mind, they're already dead. We don't know that they are, but to Wilbur L. Ross Jr., they are. Because when they were alive, it didn't matter if they were alive or dead. Because they're just draft animals to Wilbur L. Ross Jr. And if one drops dead, if two drop dead, if 13 drop dead, baby, he can find 13 more who will shut up and take the paycheck. Because this is the America that they have manufactured. This is the America that they, through people like Jack Abramoff, have bought and damned well paid for, and they expect. Oh, Lord, they don't just expect. They demand that their rights to run this place the way they want to be acknowledged. Oh, Wilbur L. Ross, Jr., we don't love you here. Maybe your mama does, but we don't. Because, you see, he's one of these Wall Street investment banker predators. He's a vulture. He's a jackal. He's a hyena who swoops in on the, you know, not so well and preys upon their flesh and bones. And he doesn't talk about rescuing miners. He talks about recovering them. Wilbur, buddy, pal, you only recover remains. You only recover bodies. You rescue people, but you wouldn't know anything about that, would you, Wilbur, because they're not people to you. They're just the workers. They're just the people who carry your godforsaken financial empire on their backs. Aren't they, Wilbur? Have another piece of have another spoonful of caviar on a wee point of toast with a little sour cream. Go ahead, Wilbur. You'll enjoy it. Wilbur L. Ross, Jr., you filth. You garbage. We have an excellent safety record. He did say, we've gotten lots of awards. Excellent. Oh, well, you've gotten lots of awards. Then I guess that just explains everything that's going on inside that night. We got an award. They'll see the big board. We should learn something from this. But, of course, we won't. Because, among other things, dear leader came out and said, we are certainly praying for the 13 miners that are trapped there in Virginia. And we are also praying, I heard this, and we are also praying for the people who are praying for them. And we are praying for the people who are praying for the people who are praying for them. And you know what? For once I agree with him, we'd better pray, because nothing he's going to do is going to help. Does the word Katrina ring a bell? Let's take a break. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Train from Soho down to Arkansas. Every stop along the way, they promised him a rubber ball. The train he rode, it had no plan, no families waiting on the way. Just town to town, the train rolled in and tried to give a child away. I can't imagine what was told my little grandpa on that train. Was he lost in someone's lies, or was he hiding all that pain? Eddie rode the orphan train.
When I found out my jeans were made using child labor in sweatshops, I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back thanking me for my concerns and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off two indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who work night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
When you have a stroke,
You may not even notice it right away. But then, time passes, and the symptoms get worse. One minute you feel fine, and the next, your speech could be slurred or not make sense. One side of your body might become numb. You might see double. You drop the TV remote because you can't hold up your arm. That's because, after a stroke, every minute you don't get help is another minute that your brain is being starved of oxygen. The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg, sudden trouble seeing, speaking, or understanding. If you experience any of these warning signs, call 911 immediately, because time lost is brain lost. Visit strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Thanks for sticking around. 28 minutes before the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On, your nightly confrontation with the facts, as we like to describe it. And you know the phone numbers, I trust. It's 877-443-2366. That's 877, the number 4, Head On. Very easy, isn't it? And, of course, also 304-658-3333. Email's easy, too. Bob@headonradio.com. Let's go to the phones. Jim's with us. Hey, Jim, you're Head On.
I hear you 5x5. How are you?
Doing dandy. Yourself?
Okay. It just looks like we've got the worst government that money can buy.
That's about the size of it, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't mean to sound harsh or cruel, but let's do the math. These men have been down there for over 36 hours.
Yeah, something like that.
And they have 7 hours in their reserve mask or whatever it is, or purifier.
Yeah, they count on them to be able to find a room with air in it and block it off from the methane, is my understanding. Or not methane, but the carbon monoxide.
And also the probes sent down there showed that the parts per million of methane were unacceptable for human...
four times lethal.
Well, all I can say is it appears to me as though hope against hope is going to become hope abandoned.
Well, the folks that are waiting and watching and worrying and praying will hold out hope until they are told that there is no hope. And I certainly can't blame them for that attitude. I think it's an appropriate attitude.
Well, you know, the only thing I can think of that's comparable to this, when they allowed this mine to go into operation like this, it reminds me of what J. Bruce Ismay said about to Thomas Andrews about the required number of lifeboats on the decks of the Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want those lifeboats there. They'll interfere with a first-class promenade.
Yeah, there is an element of comparison, isn't there?
Yeah, very much so, absolutely. Very much so, and as a result, I don't know how many over 1,500 people died because they didn't have enough boats to get into. And, you know, this could have been prevented.
Well, this mine, Jim, was notorious for roof falls.
Everything. Everything in the book.
Probably. The 11-week review that ended on December 22nd, like I said, there were 46 health and safety violations in that mine.
Right.
But you know, Wilbur Ross Jr. couldn't wait to make that place safe. He had to start making money, and it didn't matter if it cost people's lives because there are more people.
Now the original owners went into receivership, correct?
Correct. That was Anchor West Virginia Energy.
And so basically, once you buy something that's in receivership, you want to start recovering your investment as quickly as possible. You don't care who gets killed or who gets hurt, maimed or whatever.
That's right. And to do it as quickly as possible, and then get out as quickly as possible, hopefully with a profit in your pocket. And, you know, who cares what's left in the dust?
Well, you know, representing who he represents and him being who her father was, I don't see how that Capito woman could set her face in that town. I don't see how she could be among those people who have any sense of memory or any sense of exactly who she is and what she represents and the corruption of the circle of corruption that she represents in D.C.
Yeah, but you got to understand, Jim, and you know this just better than probably I do, an event like that draws politicians like a light draws moths.
Well, maybe so, but I can guarantee you it can also backfire on her, too, when they realize that the very element she represents are the ones who put those men in the ground under those conditions. And it doesn't take a whole lot of people to figure that out either, my friend, let me tell you. And speaking of which, this thing with Mr. Abramoff, I think it's going to be one of the biggest carbuncles ever launched or ever lanced on the ass of the affair of the federal government.
One, yeah. Well said.
This is going to make Watergate look like a zit. I mean, really. I don't mean to get too graphic there, but I mean, this thing is going to be running everywhere. And these men have no honor. They're going to be running for cover, ratting each other out.
Well, what did Denny Hastert has already jumped in the trench, hasn't he?
$1,000 to charity. But you know, here's the thing. That's kind of like robbing a bank. You can't go back and just say, "I'm sorry. Here it is."
I robbed the bank, but look, I gave it to the Red Cross. Okay, leave me alone. I mean, that's what this is, isn't it?
Well, that's kind of like, you know, stealing stuff from your employer, then having to take a lie detector test, and then going back before you take the lie detector test and putting it back. Well, I'm afraid it ain't going to work that way. That machine's going to show that you took it.
Yeah.
The thing is, you don't do it in the first place. By law, now, Abramoff had two restaurants in D.C. that he had bought, correct?
I thought it was only one, but I'll take
two.
Your word for it.
That's two.
Okay.
And these places were, you can't get a decent meal in D.C. for less than $100.
Probably not.
I mean, I have lived there, and I know.
Unless you want to take your life in your hands and eat at McDonald's every day.
Well, or go to someplace, I mean, maybe up in towards... Adams Morgan is someplace. But if you have more than two people there, and normally you're going to have a congressman and his wife, maybe a staffer, I mean, you're going to spend a lot of bucks. And the law, as written, says only $49.99 every 2 months.
Oh, goodness. Well, that
meals and gratuities.
That was kind of made to be broken, wasn't it?
Well, I'm afraid so. And when, you know, you hear people like Lush Rimbaugh screaming about McCain-Feingold, which is campaign finance, you know damn well the Dennis Drill has hit the nerve and there's no Novocaine there. That's when they start hollering.
Oh, yeah, and he was screaming. Oh, he was distancing himself today. He said, I don't know about this Abram. I've never met him. I've never heard of him. Horse hockey, you know.
Yeah, right. And, you know.
Nobody's ever met Jack Abramoff. He's going to turn out to be something on the order of the old radio program. He's going to be like the Shadow. They just found these little bags of money on the front porch.
Have you heard this guy's address that he made before the 1984 Republican convention?
I don't think I have.
Oh, you'd love to hear that soundbite. Oh, you would just love it. Or they were going to ride the wave of destiny or crash upon the rocks of disgrace.
Who said that? Abramoff said that?
Uh-huh. As a very young Republican, he addressed the 1984 Republican convention and said that. Yes.
Oh, I do want to hear this.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, he has. He's done that. And, you know, he's going to do time. And they've got this congressman from Ohio.
Nay.
And, of course, they're going to get, you know, big old,
Well, Hastert and DeLay and Nay.
DeLay, and then you've got some other people. This thing is just going to run like a, like an old font.
Well, you got to remember, we were, you know, Arch Moore in a bad wig, Shelley Moore Capito. You got to remember, Jim, she was the number two recipient of Tom DeLay's dirty money. So if you, you know, if you cherchez l'argent far enough, you're liable to find that Shelley Moore's got a hand, had a hand in with Jack Abramoff. We don't, you know, they're being very cagey at the Justice Department about this, and with good reason. It's the Bush Justice Department.
Well, listen, here's the thing.
They're not saying who's involved, but we got a good idea.
There's no way they can control this lobby congressman relationship. After a year's service as a staffer or a congressman, then you can register to be a lobby. Okay, that's fine. But it's controlled, that relationship is controlled and monitored by only 11 people. Now, if they were to put it under the SEC...
No, wait, back up. You might be running ahead. I know you're running ahead of me. You might be running ahead of some of the listeners. Am I to understand you to say, Jim, that...
Only 11 people in the congressional offices oversee the relationship between these lobbyists and these congressmen.
Okay, expand upon that, please.
Now, it's just 11 people. The Congress wants to keep that...
But who are they?
I'm not sure what they're called. I'm not sure what their name is. But I know they would. It would be a much better thing if the SEC, that had 400 employees in D.C., were to be able to monitor those relationships. These are the people who keep track of who has dinner with whom and who takes what gifts from whom and this, that, and the other. Who takes what trips to St. Andrews to play golf and this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
There are only 11 people who monitor these things, and all these people are screaming, well, I didn't know it was related to Abramoff. I thought it was a charity.
Well said, Jim, because, you know, you think back, if you think about some ordinary dude on the street, Jim.
To people, not doing that.
I know, but if some ordinary dude on the street gets stopped by a cop walking down the sidewalk and he's carrying a TV.
Yeah.
And the cop says, where did you get the TV?
Mm-hmm.
And the guy says, this dude gave it to me in the alley. Now, the cop's not going to buy that because he knows that the law of this and most other states say that you are under a duty with regard to property, that there is a standard that you should know or should have known that the item was hot.
Well, I mean, if you are convicted of, you know, you can be convicted of what's called receiving stolen goods, and you just get
right
time the guy did who stole it.
But what you're telling me is that while we will put a guy away in West Virginia for 1 to 10 for the scenario I just described because he should have known that the darn thing was stolen, on the other hand, we'll pat a congressman on the back and say, that's right, Jack just called you one day and asked you if you wanted to take a quick trip to Scotland and play a round of golf. And there was no tit-for-tat involved with that. There was no quid pro quo, right?
Well, see,
right.
At least they're saying that these were charities who sponsored these trips. Well, charities don't sponsor trips. Charities receive money, and they dispense it to people who need it. It doesn't go from the top down. It goes from the bottom up, supposedly.
At least that's the way it's supposed to work.
Yeah. But there are only 11 people who are in somebody in Congress, I don't know what it is yet, who oversee these activities, and there's no way they possibly can. And there's so many sub-rosa deals that go on up there. Remember when you were back at the old station, I used to tell you that K Street ran D.C.?
Oh, sure.
There you go, buddy.
And Jack Abramoff ran K Street.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But well, he was the one that was responsible for telling the rest of K Street to never, ever hire another Democrat.
Yeah.
Remember?
Of course, he did wonderful things for Native Americans and their casinos and stuff like that, just tens of millions of dollars. Just bilked out and going into delays with gerrymandering campaigns down there in Texas or anybody else who would do what his bidding.
Well, I tell you what, I don't know how far the web is going to spread. I hope it spreads like a fast metastasizing cancer, because there are a couple of people out there that ought to be just looking like dogs trying to pass a peach pit about now, two of whom would be Ralph Reed and Grover Norquist, and I can't think of two people I would love to see with that expression on their faces more.
Well, I can tell you this particular growth, which is a cancer from the American government, is probably the most virulent and highly metastatic of any kind known to medical science, okay?
I hope. I really want
that's
you to be
exactly
right on this one,
is.
Jim.
I mean, you know, that's exactly what it is, and, you know, there's no way you can get around it. I mean, the jig is up, and the sock has begun to unravel, and so is the cover. The temple veil is rent in twain.
Boy, I want you to be right on this.
Well, you are. I am right on it.
Well, we kind of got to wait and see when the indictments come out and who suddenly decides that they don't want to run for Congress after all, and who needs to spend more time with their families, you know, the usual suspects.
Well, you know, the reason they wanted him to do they cut a deal with him is because that's the only way they could really get to the top people.
Oh yeah, well, and the thing is, he cut a deal that would knock his potential prison time down to. From a level of no more than 30 years to a level of no more than 10, and they will keep that noose around his neck until he cooperates sufficiently. The only problem in all of this, Jim, and this is a mark of my cynicism, and I understand that, is that this is all being managed by Alberto Torture Gonzalez, the Attorney General, and the Bush Justice Department, and you know, if you think back, they couldn't even muster up the courage to ask for the death penalty on a terrorist bomber in the South.
Bob, this wave will engulf the Attorney General too.
Well, I don't think it'll. I don't know. You think it'll get to Gonzalez?
I said this wave will embrace an Attorney General too. You wait and see. Mark my words.
But the problem there is that
how many predictions
he still has to be the one who stands down on his own accord.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know. People stand down on their own accord when it's not really their own accord. Down to end. It's kind of like a Hobson's choice. But my friend, I play the prophet again, but how many times has I prophesied and been wrong?
So far, you've got a pretty good track record, Jim.
I'm not trying to brag, but I mean, you know, I can see what's coming down the pike. You don't have to be Albert Einstein or a rocket scientist to see this.
No, you just, the one thing we've got to have more than anything else right now, Jim, is just a little bit of patience.
Well, like I said the other night, don't worry, we're coming. We're coming. We're coming. They ask when they're going to be there. Don't worry. We're coming, and we'll be there.
Sounds great, Jim. Thanks so much.
Goodbye.
Take care. All right, quick break, and when we come back... maybe we ought to delve a little more into the Abramoff thing. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Friends, Eric Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines, but there's something else that I'm into even more. Taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Fight childhood asthma, then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before before they pile up in the sink and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard, and we could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Now I will tell you what I've done for you. 50,000 tears I've cried, screaming, deceiving, and bleeding for you. And you still won't hear me. Don't hold your hand this time.
All right. Coming up on 8 minutes before the hour, the phone lines are kind of stacked up. We're going to get to them as quickly as we possibly humanly can. A quick email that we received from our good friend Benedict. He notes, been monitoring both print and TV news since I heard of the West Virginia mine accident. Not a single word mentioning that the mine was non-union. Not one single word. And he's absolutely right. I've been paying attention to the same thing. And frankly, I don't know if the UMW is trying to be a little bit circumspect in this, but I rely on the words of my father, and I take him at his word because he's been incredibly honest with me for some 40 some years now. And he looked at me and he said, "You got to understand that once upon a time, John L. Lewis would have been the first person at that mine site, whether it was union or non-union." And frankly, the UMW should do something proactive here. But no, the media can't be bothered to mention that this is a non-union operation, because that would raise questions with the company as to why they let this happen. And you know, they're saying, "Wow, you know, it's been a steady litany. Oh, it wasn't our fault. It wasn't our fault." They've done everything except come right out and call it an act of God. You know, that it's true. And that's what they want people thinking. You know, "Well, these things just kind of happen in the mining community." No, they don't. Union mines have much higher safety records, have much more, much lower accident rates than non-union mines. And I won't use that word for non-union miners, because everybody has to work. Everybody has to make a living. But Lord God, you wonder if some families are sitting around thinking, "If only we'd taken that card, maybe this wouldn't have happened." Because it probably wouldn't have. Let's go to the phones. Gene is with us. Hey, Gene, welcome to the program. You're head on.
Hi, Bob.
How you doing?
Okay, I got a quick question. We're fortunate enough here in the Portland area to have Mr. Hartman as our local liberal DJ in the morning.
Tom's great.
I woke up this morning to go to a meeting early, so I caught him, and he said something about the Abramoff thing, which I haven't really been following. But he said, this could be a little tinfoily, but he said, there's this something going on about those boats that Abramoff has.
Oh, the Sun Cruise Lines.
Down in Florida.
Right.
And apparently Mohammed Atta partying on one of those boats.
Oh, now that's a fresh and new one, Gene. I know nothing about that. I'll have to dig around on that.
Okay, because I wanted to know, because I just got home, so I've been Googling, and I can't really find exactly what that's there. But I don't think he would have said that if there wasn't something there.
Tom Hartman doesn't just make stuff up. I mean, you know, he's on our side of the fight.
Yeah.
The other side just makes stuff up.
That's what I thought.
But it wouldn't surprise me, because that is actually what Abramoff pled to today, was stuff relating to that Sun Cruise acquisition, because he dummied up a bunch of documents, making him look like he was worth a lot more money than he actually was when he was trying to buy it. The idea was for him and this buddy of his named Kidan or Kidan, K-I-D-A-N, they were going to buy it, and then they were going to turn them into... like intracoastal waterway casinos.
Uh-huh.
That was the idea. But the notion that Mohammed Atta partied on these things, it could very well be true, Gene, and we will never, it's another one of those things you'll never hear a peep about in the mainstream media, because they've got Bush's butt to cover.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to throw that out there, because most people, when they talk about 911, it's the buildings crash and all that kind of thing, and this is something that was completely new angle of that. Oh my goodness, don't tell me this is the Reichstag fire evidence that we all kind of think.
It could be. I mean, we know that Mohammed Atta hung out in Florida. We know that the day before, September 10th, he was in a strip joint in Florida, wasn't he? Wasn't there evidence of him hanging out, and him a good Muslim?
Yeah, I really don't know. I have to tell you the honest truth, I don't really follow that kind of stuff. I'm more into the I follow it, but I try to get the real off the beaten path stuff.
Uh huh.
That So.
Well, I certainly appreciate the stuff you send me.
Okay. Well, that's all I really wanted to say.
Okay. Well, thanks for planting the seed, Gene, because I'm sure somebody out there may have heard it as well, and perhaps can fill us in a little bit. And I'd really appreciate it if they would.
Thank you.
All right. Take care, Gene.
See ya.
Bye now.
Bye.
And let's see. Jeff in Pennsylvania. Hey, Jeff, you're head on.
Hi there, Bob.
How you doing
tonight?
Oh, doing pretty good. Yourself?
Well, I could be better.
Yeah.
I was going to call you last night, but it was just a little bit too depressing. Not much better today.
I know.
But anyway, about Gene's comment with Mohammed Atta,
mm-hmm.
I think I saw that. It was either a link on Buzzflash or Democratic Underground.
Okay.
It was something that Randy Rhodes talked about today, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So the information's out there. You search around. I'm sure he's going to find it. But now I I can't believe the callous nature of these people that run these companies, and they're just willing to throw people under the bus.
Yeah. They absolutely will, especially these predators like International Coal Group and this Ross character.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like to admit it, Jeff, but I can understand how they think. I know how they think. People are cheaper than just about any other part of their business plan.
Well, it doesn't matter which junior you're talking about. They could care less about the people.
Yeah. Breaks your heart.
Yeah.
And to hear dear leader today, we're praying for him. You know, I don't care who he prays for. Does anyone who is religiously inclined think that God listens to that man?
No, their God isn't the same as my God.
No. No, their God flows out on print from printing presses.
No, one other thing I wanted to mention. You said something. I think it was last week. You know, you didn't quite hold yourself in the same ballpark as Mike Malloy and Randy Rhodes. And I got to say, you're right up there in my book.
Well, thank you very kindly. I appreciate that, Jeff.
Yeah.
My wife will be applying the C-clamp to my head very shortly.
Well, I think you're pretty lucky there, too. So.
I do, too.
Yeah, you gotta take the good things in this life with the bad, but unfortunately we're dealing with a lot of bad right now.
Well, it runs so much further past bad. I mean, we're into the realm of, you know, like movie epic style evil.
Well, the one thing I think about is I don't remember whether it was Eisenhower or Roosevelt who said that any political party that tried to tear down Social Security would be non-existent in the future.
That was Eisenhower.
Yeah, they definitely overstepped their bounds when they started going after that. And you know, I'm just praying and hoping and doing everything I can to make sure that 2006 is going to be the year things turn around.
Well, you're in PA, so you can strike a big blow by getting out there and working for whomever wins the Democratic primary for your Senate seat.
Well, that's a real tough call because everybody's standing behind you know, the popular candidate.
Casey.
But Mike Panaccio is.
You've got a better candidate. Mike Panaccio is a far better Democrat, at least in my estimation, based on what I've read about him, than Casey is.
Absolutely, no question about that.
But there, you know, there's an element that says, you know, let's get Casey in there, and you know, maybe we can work with him after that.
Yeah, well, Casey is a little bit too right wing, too moderate for me. You know, I like somebody that can stand up for what they really believe in and has a life experience and history that shows it.
Exactly.
And Mike is definitely there.
Well, I need to get Mike on this program, by the way.
I think that would be a great idea.
We need to let people hear a little bit about him because we've got several listeners in PA, and he deserves to be heard. It's a sad commentary that money drives one's ability to get one's message out. You know, we couldn't have a Lincoln Douglas debate in 2006.
No. Well, we probably won't have one in 2008 either. Not with the way the debate structure is set up.
No, those aren't debates. I took debate in high school. Those aren't debates.
Not even close.
Hey, Jeff, so good to hear from you, and I hope we'll hear from you again soon. Take care,
absolutely.
And thanks for the very kind words.
Take care.
Bye now.
Good night.
And a quick break when we come back, more of your phone calls. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You know I can't. It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Awfully glad to have you with us for the second hour of Head On. I'm Bob. Agnes is at the controls for the Heart of the Sun. Who did that song? Set the controls for the Heart of the Sun. I don't remember. 6 minutes after the hour. The phone number, as you know, 877-4, the number four, Head On, 877-443-2366 or 304-658-3333. Use whichever one you feel compelled to use. And the email is easy, too, bob@headonradio.com. Let's go to the phones. David's been waiting through the break, and I appreciate it. Hey, David, you're head on.
Bob, I'm thrilled to have this long a wait because it means a bunch of folks are responding. My heart leaps with joy.
So does ours. Yeah, we had a little flurry there. It was very cool.
And now, after a relentless kiss-up, I'd like 60 seconds to throw one out to a previous caller, kind of an insider sort of thing. May I do that?
Yeah, take 120 seconds if you need them.
I would like a previous caller to know that in his town where he lives, the Hawthorne Bridge is the biggest nightmare any cyclist ever rode across. There's nothing tougher than the Hawthorne Bridge with a little rain falling. I throw that out to my brother in Stump Town. So, you know, he'll know what I'm talking about.
Okay. Now, this isn't code. Do we need to tell the NSA guy that this isn't code about the bridge?
Chesapeake Tide Table. No, yeah. We don't need to say a word to the NSA.
Okay. We didn't know, because they're already listening.
Of course they are. So let's get semi-serious. In the very first NPR broadcast that you drew on so skillfully, a woman of midlife maturity said, and I didn't hear it in a subsequent broadcast, and maybe they wanted to verify it. I don't know why I didn't hear it again. But a woman of impassioned honesty said plainly and clearly, before they shut that mine down for Christmas, my husband said there was gas down there, and he knew it. He talked to the bosses, and they asked him why he was so hard to get along with. And he went to work today after the shutdown, knowing the buildup was dangerous. And I don't know about him now.
Jesus. And you never heard it again?
It didn't repeat a second time. It didn't repeat in subsequent broadcasts. You know, I'm an old guy. Sometimes I wake up at 5 in the morning when they broadcast that first blast of NPR. And in many cases, that first time around differs slightly. But there was that woman in that glorious West Virginia Long Eye accent saying, my husband said that there was gas in that mine, and he was concerned about the shutdown over Christmas and the buildup. He didn't want to go back. He went back.
He had to. I mean, it's not like you can say, boss, I ain't going to go, because they'll say, fine, don't go. You're fired. Goodbye.
And there'll be a no benefit, no health plan, no retirement pension, probably something resembling a union hourly rate, maybe not.
No, they'll pay better than union. They do. I mean, I'll be the first to admit it. Massey and these other skanks, they pay, you know what that's like, Bob?
You know when they pay more per hour than union and they forget the rest of it. That's the perfect comparison. That's the perfect analogy to, hey kid, first one's free.
Yeah. That's exactly it.
It's a hook.
Well, and bear in mind, you know, Massey is notorious for talking, we have a great benefits program. You know, they've done everything short of putting in the company store in Boone County, West Virginia. They've got a clinic down there with a real live doctor. And, you know, if you get sick, you go to the company doctor. And it won't be long before, if you need clothes, that you go to the company store. The fact of the matter is, though, they say they got a benefits program. They need to look at what Massey did to the union miners, because that's going to happen to their pensions. That's going to happen to their 401ks. It'll all be raided. It'll be taken from them. It'll be stolen. One of these days they'll find out it was a Ponzi scheme and that all the contributions Massey was supposed to be making to their plans ain't there anymore. Because that's just good business practice in Bush America, David.
Oh, exactly. It's good business practice in Bush America. And it's a played out mine. They bought it from people that, when they paid right, they lived right, and they ran it right, they couldn't make money. So they sold it to some people that could cut some corners, throw away the benefits package, and for a time period, and I heard you say it earlier, once that lower grade of coal or that lower concentration of good coal is gone, they're gone.
Yeah, I mean, tumbleweeds in the streets, they're gone.
Whether it's the canary that can't breathe or the candle they blow out, they'll be gone.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, at its absolute rock-solid best, the place was, this Sago number one, was doing 800,000 tons of coal a year. That ain't a bunch of coal.
Okay, if you say so. I don't know.
No, it sounds like a huge number, but it's not a huge production facility. It had 145 employees working in shifts of 10 people in the production shift and one foreman.
Well, now, when you say that, that does not sound like a whole lot.
No, it's not. This mine and several other groups were purchased by International Coal Group for the express purpose of absolutely stripping out whatever could be gotten out of it. You know, declare a loss on one, take a profit on the other. But Mr. Ross and his investor buddies make out like bandits.
So cut the benefits, cut the rest of it, work the seeds and stems, and when it's all gone, cut them loose and go to the bank.
That's about how it works. And giggle all the way.
And drop a soundbite about safety records.
Yeah. Yeah, we haven't. We've won awards. I read that in the paper this morning, David, and my jaw dropped open. You know, why, we've won awards. You know, as if that somehow or another, the fact that you've won awards is going to negate what's going on there now. I mean, this place, there was, in another time, old line miners, much like, old line miners had a word to describe a mine like Sago number one, and what the lady was talking about that you mentioned. It's a widowmaker.
Ooh.
It's a widowmaker.
It's a frightening phrase, and it's all too accurate.
And you know, that hateful Shelley Moore Capito, you know, it's the beauty of the generations of coal, which is the backbone of our state.
Their willingness to dedicate themselves, parenthesis, to the greed that we, the owner, have installed. We admire their courageous behavior to make sure we're millionaires, and they have ill health and death to show for it. We admire their courage.
Yeah, that's about the size of it. But meanwhile, like I said last night, David, somewhere off in some high-rise somewhere, in some office tower, in some little cubicle, or in a corner office perhaps, there is a senior vice president for accounting who is absolutely tearing at his hair, screaming, "How much is the rescue effort going to cost? How much is the comp debt going to be?" And yet, we've got a legislature in West Virginia, David, that is technically majority Democrat. And you know what that majority of Democrats has done? They have busted their rear ends to make it harder and harder and harder and harder for an injured miner to collect the workers' comp benefits that he has been promised in exchange for his health and well-being.
Well, Bob, I'm sorry. I really feel you've gone over the line there, because our president is praying for the loser, and that should make it all better. Kiss, kiss.
Is this where I take the break and go get the bucket and regurgitate? Oh, my God, David.
Bob, I appreciate you letting me be so rude to the rest of the world.
Oh, the world appreciates it, David. Take care and have a great night.
You too, Bob.
Bye now. Quick break and then more of your phone calls. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Put your keys between your knuckles. You walk in well-lit areas. Stay clear of parked vans. Someone approaches you and you cross to the other side of the street. Your cell phone is ready. The numbers for help saved on speed dial. You lock the door behind you. Once, twice, maybe three times. Now you feel safe, secure. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not making healthy choices, you could be one of the nearly 2 out of 3 women killed by cancer, diabetes, heart disease, or stroke. So eat right, get active, don't smoke, see your doctor, and live. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at 1-866-399-6789 or visit us at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
The Democratic Party keeps moving closer and closer to where the Republican Party is in order to try to win elections. And I've watched how Democrats have consistently become more and more disgusted with the National Party because of the fact that they keep doing this. To no surprise, what did I find when I opened up the Washington Post? Senator Clinton crafts vague stance on war with eye to 2008. Senator Clinton, get a clue and, you know, get a backbone, for God's sake. You know, stand up and stand for something. I guess that's what really gets to me worse than anything, you know, anything else, is that when I vote for a leader, I want that leader to say to me, this is not a popular stand, and I understand this. This stand that I'm taking is going to polarize a lot of people, but you know what? I believe in what I'm doing, you know, and I will do what I can to carry it through regardless of my political future. This is Bruce Birch. I'd like to invite you to join me for All Things Reconsidered this Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern. For connection information, visit allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
Okay, I really appreciate folks hanging around on the phones as we get to them. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, if you didn't know. Glad to have you on board. Special hellos to our friends in the Tom Hartman chat room, our friends at Democratic Underground, those listening on iTunes, those listening at radiopower.org sometime tomorrow. It's really, really great to have you all out there sharing time with us. Let's do go back to the phones. Chris is with us. Hey, Chris, you're Head On.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
I was looking for an article on what Jim was talking about earlier, about who's over the lobbyist.
Mm-hmm.
And I found some. Of course, I hadn't found it.
Yeah.
It's an article from 2001, December 4th, from the Washington Post. I found it on commondreams.org. I sent you the link to it.
Okay.
Okie dokie. There is just the slimmest chance that this Abramoff scandal and the miners could be connected.
Really?
It's the slimmest chance.
Okay.
Okay, it talks about a meeting that John Graham, Bush's regulatory czar, John Graham, who is basically over the lobbyist, held a meeting, and he made sure not to be there. But all the
so he called a meeting and then didn't show up.
Yeah. All the lobbyists that were there were told to tell them what rules were burdensome and see what they could do about it.
Burdensome.
Burdensome. Here's a quote from this article. She sent a copy of this to the Washington Post. Here's a quote. Her chart listed 57 of the most paperwork-intensive rules. Where have we heard that before?
Oh, yes.
The business community wants to target rules which deal with health, safety, and the environment, govern everything from pesticide use to coal mine ventilation to standards for bloodborne pathogens. They cover such areas as air and water quality, food labeling, lead paint disclosure, truck safety inspection, toxic release reporting, and family and medical leave.
You're right. It does tie together. I know exactly what you're talking about, Chris, because it wasn't a year or two ago that we were talking about the fact that MSHA, the Mine Safety and Health Administration, was absolutely busting its hump to relax coal dust restrictions inside the mines. And the only discussion that took place in that context was the effect on miners' health in terms of dust they breathe in. But it also stands to reason that if you let coal dust accumulate, well, it becomes a very you don't have to have that engineering degree to know it, although most engineers could tell you. You let that dust accumulate enough, one spark, boom.
Yeah.
And I mean, right. And that's not just coal dust.
Like you were talking about last
that's,
night.
That's corn spark. Dust. That's every so often you'll hear a grain silo in the Midwest is blown up.
Yeah. Like you were talking about, one spark from that robot they're sending down there.
Yeah.
John Graham founded the Harvard Center for Risk Analysis, a think tank that is funded in large part by industry groups and individual businesses, and that has argued that many regulations and policies are misguided.
Oh, of course they are. You know, any regulation is misguided if you're talking to a Republican, Chris,
yeah.
Because they don't believe in the free market so much as they believe in free piracy. And if you attempt to regulate, pirates became pirates because they didn't like being regulated.
Yeah. Here's another quote that you'll get a kick out of in a very disgusting, over-the-bucket kind of way. So, let's just be honest, why don't we?
Yeah, sure.
Some of the 57 regulations, after all, are potentially inflammatory. For example, some business groups would like to reshape the Family and Medical Leave Act to stop parents from taking their leave in small increments, but that could have significant political consequences. No kidding. Here's the sentence. Unions would fight any changes to the so-called Davis-Bacon prevailing wage rules on government construction projects.
Davis-Bacon, absolutely.
Hello, Wayne.
Yeah.
The Bush administration might be reluctant to tinker with food labeling rules, quote, needle stick safety, unquote, standards for hospital workers, hello, nurses at Beckley, and community right to know requirements that force industries to disclose their toxic chemicals.
Oh God!
I didn't want to find this.
No, well, no, you didn't. But you know, look, when you open when you're down in the crypt and the bats are hanging and you open the coffin, you don't want to see the vampire. But usually, the vampire is there.
No, he's right behind you. And watching you admire his lair, and then he has the simple thing of...
Yeah, I know.
That's more, I think, that's more what it's like. The other link I sent you is from American Radio Networks, or American Radio Works, sorry. It is a list, it's a site there, where you can find your representatives by name or by state and see how much their trips usually cost that they take. And they do.
You mean that little afternoon golfing in Scotland?
Yeah, okay. Cost of trips for Senator Rockefeller.
Okay.
$1,110. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, Jay can afford his own plane fares.
Robert Byrd, $698.
Okay.
Okay, let's go the other side of the aisle.
This is where it gets fun.
Nick J. Rahal II.
Oh, wait, you're still in Democrat land.
Oh, am I?
Yeah.
Well, then why did he spend $67,085.66?
Woo! Mother!
Why did Alan Mollahan? $10,198.
Okay.
Shelley Moore Capito, $2,826.
Well, she's only been in there a couple of years, but yeah.
Total spent on representatives, $80,000.
It's a question that, look, you know, I'm equal opportunity on this. I'm in the school, Chris, of let us teach Democrats to be Democrats. And some of us are going to have to start actively teaching.
Mm-hmm.
There's these middle of the road smarmy sort of, oh, don't be mean to the Republicans because that turns off the voters. Okay, fine. Then we'll be mean to you, and you can, we're not asking much. Start being a damn Democrat. You don't, look, you know, I'm in favor of a rule. Excuse me. Didn't figure you wanted me to cough in your ear. I'm in favor of a rule that says no member of Congress, senator or representative, may take so much as a penny from an outside source. Here, we pay you this much money every year. Congratulations on winning your election. Do your damn job. It's not like you're not getting your health care taken care of and you don't have a pretty tasty pension. No money from nowhere. If they can't, you know, if the Amalgamated Toxic Pollution Association of America cannot convince you of the correctness of their position by virtue of the quality of their argument, then we should not give them the opportunity to do so by the quality of their money.
Exactly.
I mean, is that okay?
Yeah. Here's a really drastic difference. Barbara Boxer, $75,183.
Mm-hmm.
Diane Feinstein, $583.
Yeah, you got Tom DeLay's numbers there.
See Texas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy, this ought to be good. $108,506. He ranks 30th.
30th?
Out of 638.
Oh, okay. Who's number one?
Ranked number two, Raymond E. Gene Green from Texas. Total cost, $175,942. I don't know who ranks number one. I'd have to happen upon it to see it. But there is hopefully some good news in Alabama. Lucy, former Lieutenant Governor Lucy Baxley, threw her head into the noose today for run for governor.
Well, good luck to her because she's going to be running. She's probably going to be running against Roy Moore. You understand that, don't you?
Well, can you believe that our former governor is going to run again?
Bob Riley?
No, not Bob. Siegelman.
Oh, Don. Yeah, well, Don's done. It's just that nobody got around to telling him yet.
Indict me and I'll run again.
Well, the indictment was political. We all know that. I mean, that's how the game is played. But Don's done. And you know, Riley's going to run. Riley will. The Republican primary in Alabama is going to be better than most circus acts.
It's going to be bloody.
It's going to be Roy Moore versus Bob Riley, and they're going to be in a dead heat to out Jesus the other. It's going to be if the Republican Party is smart, they will sell tickets to this.
It's like the guy that I worked with when I worked at Lowe's years ago. I had a boss. I had a black guy on our crew. We worked overnight stocking, and we put up 40,000 pounds of merchandise each night, so we were pretty tired folks. And we had a boss, white guy, total redneck, who every other night said the best thing he had ever seen was when Bull Connor released the dogs on him.
Oh, God.
And what's worse is the black guy working on the crew just laughed.
Well, what's he supposed to do? I mean, anybody in their right mind would look at a freak like that and say, you know, why don't you go to hell in a hurry? But the problem is, you're in a right-to-work state. You're in Alabama. Don't belong to
but
a union.
He would argue with them on other things, but he wouldn't on that.
Well, of course not. Of course not. Hey, Chris, we've run out of time. Thanks for all the info.
All right. Take care.
Take care now. And quick break, and then we come back. More calls. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Well, they were giving the grace to go, riding a song to loosen the fool.
picked up a hiker. Didn't want to live on the hostage.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. Several left-wing bloggers have pointed out that the right-wing blogosphere, who claim to espouse the ideology of rugged individualism, have a tendency to cower in a corner whenever they face a real threat. That's not surprising. Like any schoolyard bully, these people only attack those who can't or won't fight back, like us liberals. President Bush has gone on record as saying he's in office to protect the American people. And they all agree and run for cover behind him as he stands behind the flag and the soldiers he put into danger without reason. After the Pearl Harbor attack, millions of men rushed to join the service, not even bothering to wait to be drafted. They had lives to lead, they had wives and children and careers, and going to war was the last thing they wanted to do. But they did it because they understood how important it was, and rightfully so. After 9/11, there were thousands of men who did indeed sign up. But if you look around the right-wing blogs and websites and at organizations like the College Republicans, you'll see plenty of able-bodied men and women who fully support the war in Iraq but can't be bothered to go out and fight it themselves. Now, it seems to me that if you believe in something that strongly, you'd be willing to risk your life for it. But these people aren't even willing to risk their precious careers. It makes you wonder if they really believe what they say they believe. Maybe if they took all the energy they used attacking real war veterans like John Murtha, Max Cleland, and John Kerry, we'd have won the war on terror long ago. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
By the time you were born, there were four other siblings, with your mama waiting, your daddy in jail, and your oldest brother was away at a home, and you didn't meet him till you were 19.
All right, 26 minutes before the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On, and straight to the phones. Ed's been waiting an awful long time. We appreciate it. Hey, Ed, you're Head On.
How you doing, Bob?
Doing good. You?
Doing pretty good. I had a couple comments to make. One, I just listened to this guy that calls himself the new president of this coal company.
Yeah.
And my question is to him is, why didn't he close with that many violations? In other words, he indicated that he inherited all these violations and these problems.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why didn't he close the coal mine down until he got the problems cleared?
Well, see, Ed, he's relying on the mainstream media to keep people like you and me in the dark. The fact of the matter is, he didn't inherit diddly. That mine was acquired by ICG, International Coal Group, by virtue of a bankruptcy and a sale in March of 2005. The last review that they had that revealed these 46 violations was carried out between October and December the 22nd. The review ended, Ed, on December the 22nd, and they were hell-bent for leather to get going.
Mm-hmm. Well, another thing that I question is this first, according to their own sketches, the first one of these buggies made it past the explosion, and they got trapped. The last six or so that was behind it made it out. Now, how I can understand an explosion when you drill into a pocket of this gas.
Right.
But there's no excuse for that not being tested and somebody finding out that that gas was there.
They knew it was there, Ed.
Yeah, well, they, you know, criminal action ought to be taken against those guys. But the fact that they can drill these 2 and 3 inch holes all the way down 200 and some feet now, why wasn't the holes drilled occasionally to let any gases like that escape.
Well, the thing is, they are. There are parallel shafts in a drift mine. There are parallel ventilation shafts that are drilled, are tunneled in. The problem is, though, the inspections had taken place, and this mine was filthy with gas, and it was filthy with rock dust and coal dust, and it was absolutely a nightmare for slate falls and roof falls.
Yeah.
But the company, we come back to it, the company didn't care.
And inspectors. The inspecting group has been weakened so much.
Oh, yeah.
By people like Bush and others that don't want any regulation. They like these labor-free zones where nobody can say nothing.
Yeah.
You know, they're home free with whatever they do. My dog's barking. I'm gonna.
That's all right. That's okay. That's okay.
But anyway, I just wanted to comment on that. And then I heard you talking about the Republican Party. Bob, the fact of the matter is these companies are owned. They own, like ours, the company I work for had 44 major corporations, including Brenniff Airlines, Whitehorse Glove, Armadillo Gear, and the Hyatt Regencies. They owned all that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think for a minute they're sitting in those offices in Chicago worrying about one plant that makes them $50 million a year, you're wrong. They don't care, and if you interfere with them, they'll do just like they did down here. They'll close it down and close it off permanent for any type of that work, or they'll move it somewhere else.
Well, precisely. With this particular mine, consider this. In 2004, the Sago No. 1 mine had 68 safety violations. In 2005, it had 208. And you know, you were talking about the regulatory process being weakened. You know how much a safety violation costs a coal mine?
I have no idea.
$250, Ed.
Well, that's great comparing to this many lives, isn't it?
Well, that's, you know, and that tells you a little bit about the level of weakness that's been imposed on them, and you know the degree to, because you know if the Bush administration cared about human beings, they would make sure that the human beings who work in the mines, that their lives were guarded and protected, and that the loss of one would be horrifically costly.
Yeah, and because they're the guys that's in there making our energy. And, you know, there's further proof of it, you know, on the war. I mean, if there was a care at all this type of killing and the, you know, look at the airplane crashes and so forth that's happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that's weakened regulations. That's all that is.
Sure.
Everything is open the door, open those boardroom doors and let us at them. That's the attitude that's there now.
And it goes, and you know, let's be honest, it goes all the way downhill, Ed. You know, there are safety regulations out there that the average working man despises.
Uh-huh.
And you know it, and I know it, too.
Yep.
But the fact is, if you've got a proactive administration and you proactively make sure that those safety regulations are adhered to, you have less disasters.
Yeah. Well, I know that just in a plant, when they come along with the no lead paint, that alone, because I saw, I know a couple guys that died from that. There's some kind of fibrosis of the lungs or something they called it, the
mm-hmm.
doctors. But it wasn't nothing but lungs full of lead. And then when that come along, then some of the lung conditions, you know, they weren't there. Plus, the companies got stiffer on, that was back in the good years, the companies got stiffer on wearing respirators and so forth like that, better ventilations, and the unions went through a period of strength that made the companies, you know, make the conditions a little bit safer.
Yeah.
But when they get too, when you interfere with them too much, then they still got that final option, closing it down or moving it. But to know that those guys
those guys themselves probably live from payday to payday.
Well, sure, that's the way the company likes it, Ed.
Yeah, and but for me to stand back and evaluate, is my life worth this, or can I do something else, even if it's working at McDonald's? Can I do better than put my life on the line every day? But they paint this picture that, oh, those coal miners love that. It's in their blood. They don't know. I'll tell you what's in their blood. It's coal dust and methane gas that destroys them. That's what's in their blood. And they get on this news and try to make it look like, well, they wouldn't have had it no other way.
And I've seen that too, and it's disgusting.
Yeah.
You know, well, you know, and the one I especially hate is, well, they knew the risks. You know, no, they didn't. Ed, they didn't know the risks. They didn't necessarily know about those 208 violations. Or maybe they did, according to the one lady who was on NPR. You don't know.
I never did have any list presented to me when I was president of a union, except by the safety man, and we had it in the contract. They never did tell you, if it wasn't so pitiful, it'd be funny. The company ain't gonna tell you nothing that's gonna cause you to, belly up against them. And that's speaking from experience. I mean, years of it. And,
these guys didn't have a union, Ed. If they say that the thing is just, thick damp with gas, and you come out and you tell the boss man and you say, I ain't going back in there.
And you
don't have a union.
You walk the other way. That's what they'll tell you. But what gets me is no testing for, I mean, that is so obvious that one got in front of that gas. And the other buggy was behind them with men in it, and it exploded right between them.
You know, the funny thing is, there's somebody out there on this mine story, Ed, somebody out there's lying, because one of the things I've heard all day long is, you know, we've gotten the rescue crews in there, and they can't see any evidence of anything being burned.
Yeah, well, if they were so conscientious, why didn't they clear up the violations instead of... We're making every effort to get these men out just as quickly and safely as we can. Why didn't they do that before? You know, why didn't they clear up the problem before? I mean, I wouldn't hold still for that. They wouldn't get up in my face and tell me a bunch of garbage. I know better. And it is disgusting. And when it's no different than the war, you know, lives are being spent, both of them, as far as I'm concerned, is an equal gamble, whether you make it back or not under those conditions.
Well, you know, we got 13 miners trapped in a coal mine in Upshur County, Ed. We've got 15 West Virginians who have died for a lie in Georgia's war in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? In either instance, it's almost the same thing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's you evaluate them both the same way, and it's just somebody... of course, we know what George Bush's capabilities are, but, you know, going on the political end of it, you hear these guys, and to my soul, I can't figure why King Weed Eater and his other buddy on the morning show is so against a person like Byrd or one of these people that will help a West Virginia. What do they get? What can they possibly get out of a person... a Republican. What do we want? South Carolina? If they do, drive down through there and watch how the state police are doing. Seven, eight of them at a time with their feet cocked up on the front of the car like a vulture waiting on somebody to go a mile over the speed limit when you're on your way to Myrtle Beach. That's the reason I won't go down there ever again because of the political attitude and the Chamber of Commerce controlled. When they put the national weather on like they do here on the weather station, they cut it off and put their version on it. And me and one of my friends, like, I froze to death every day. It was 65 degrees, they said, and it was sleeting and 40 degrees. And I said, this is enough, you know. And I told the people at the hotel we were staying at, I said, you got my last dollar. I will never, if I got any control of my life, come back to South Carolina. And if these idiots like it get on there, like the Republicans are going to give them something, get them to drive through Carolina, South Carolina. The all you got is somebody with about a quarter acre of cotton in their front yard with old plastic bags blowed up against them, and it looks like a poverty thing. There's nothing till you get to Myrtle Beach.
Yeah, but that's not just South Carolina. That's Georgia. That's Tennessee. That's Alabama. That's Mississippi. And it goes all the way back to the Civil War. You know, they don't. Whoever controls the money doesn't like for the people who are working for them to have any power.
And what a bunch of hypocrites! Who was that one that was supposed to be a racist and
Jesse Helms?
Jesse Helms. Yeah, I couldn't think of his name. Look what a bunch of hypocrites they are. And Bob, I think I mentioned before. We've got relatives. They're not my relatives, but they're still connected to the family.
Right.
And you talking about, and they call themselves church members, and they're doing nothing but robbing one of their aunts blind. And that's a kind of, you know, if that's what it takes to be a Southerner, get me up to the North Pole or something. I just that kind of scumbags and then call ourselves church. Yeah, I guess they are church members. It don't take much to be a member. It takes a whole lot to live up to the standard, though.
There's the trick, Ed.
Yeah, but anyway, I just had a comment, and this guy's on television now talking about that he inherited all these problems. To my soul, if I knew I had them, I'd close that stinking mines down till I got them cleared up. Instead of putting a death trap out there for some of the workers, lay them off and let them draw unemployment. It beats the heck out of getting mud thrown in your face.
Or getting killed.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Graveyard.
Gotcha. Sorry, I was a little slow on the uptake there, Ed. But you're absolutely right. But the variable in that equation is money. And that guy may be president, but there's a boss man over him, and he says, get that mine going, get the coal coming out of it, we got money to make, and if somebody don't like it, fire him and get you somebody else. And if somebody dies, that's okay, because there's somebody waiting, and we'll hire him.
That's right.
The attitude.
Yep. Well, I just had a few comments to make.
I always appreciate them, Ed.
I tried to call you and wish you Happy New Year, and you guys got on your horse real quick, I guess.
You take care now.
All right. Save
bye
you.
Now.
And bye.
And a quick break. We'll come back. This is Head On. I'm Bob.
Hey friends, Eric Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines, but there's something else that I'm into even more. Taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her.
Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Mrs. Deer, you're in the road again.
Oh, Ranger, I saw headlights and...
I understand.
Hey, so you're working late, huh?
Yeah, Smokey and I were up thinking of ways to remind people to be responsible for fires they start.
So what you come up with?
We're going to make some radio commercials featuring a ranger and talking animals.
A little sophomoric, don't you think?
Yeah, so?
Remember, only you can prevent wildfires. A public service message from Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, State Forester, and the Ag Council.
As if it was necessary for me to actually convince you that these god-awful Republicans and, you know, their corporatist cronies don't give a tinker's damn about human lives. Well, and I don't have to convince you. You already know that. That's the beauty of all of this. Dear leader ran off to somewhere called Brook Army Medical Center. It's in Texas, San Antonio, perhaps. And there, he visited a ward. Now, this was yesterday or the day before. He visited a ward filled with veterans who have lost limbs, minds, been horribly burned, mutilated. And I don't know if you've seen the photographs, but he showed up with a big scratch on his head. You know, this is the guy who can't eat pretzels, who can't ride bicycles, you know, who can't walk and chew gum without you know, almost creating a constitutional crisis of succession. So he shows up in this hospital with this scratch on his head, and I should have gotten to this perhaps earlier, but, well, you know how it was last night. And now, the soundbite you're going to hear, I had to pull from MSNBC's Countdown with Keith Olbermann, so... I want to make sure that proper credit is given along those lines. You're going to hear some music running underneath it. That's MSNBC. That's the Countdown program's music. But, the words are real. And rather than sit here and try to describe it for you, just in your... Maybe you've seen the... He shows up. He's got the scratch on his head. And he goes to Brook Army Medical Center in Texas. And he's talking to soldiers who have had... limbs blown off in his filthy, made-up, phantasmagorical nightmare of a war in Iraq. Just listen.
You can probably see I was injured myself, not here at the hospital, but in combat with a cedar. I eventually won.
Did you get that? Is there anybody within the reach of my voice who would be so cruel, so utterly heartless, such an absolute two-bit bastard as to stand there in front of maimed American soldiers and say, "It got me scratched doing battle. I was in combat, you know. I was in combat with a cedar. I eventually won." This, of course, is the same guy who did a joke reel for the Washington Correspondents' Dinner, where he was crawling around on the floor, on the carpet, looking under couches and coffee tables. Yeah, no weapons of mass destruction down here. Yes, dear, really. Reality isn't real to him. That's why it had the sort of phony, tinny ring of a whorehouse piano when I heard today. And we're praying for all them miners trapped in Western Virginia. Yeah. I don't know if you've heard that soundbite before, but I felt like you deserved to hear it. The president, the erstwhile president of the United States of America, once upon a time the greatest nation the world had ever seen. The president of these United States, this union. Screw a homeland, this union. The president of this union. Of course, we don't like to call it a union because that makes people think about unions, and, well, you know, unions are bad. This union, the president of this union, for God's sakes, made jokes about doing combat in front of soldiers missing arms, feet, legs, burned, horribly burned, maimed, some of whom fall asleep at night praying to God Almighty just to die because they don't want to live this way anymore. And that rat punk who inhabits the people's house at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, that awful, god-awful human being, human being, stands, as you can see, I was in a little combat myself. I was engaged in combat with a cedar tree cutting brush on my ranch, and I eventually won. Just like we'll eventually win in Iraq, because it's just like cutting brush. We're going to take a break. Let that soak in for a little while. Run screaming around the room if you feel the need. God knows I did the first time I heard it. This is Head On. I'm Bob.
That I heard that long whistle wind. shed. Orange Paris, parking in the bed. There's a girl there, she knows how to unwind. She don't talk much, but she knows just how to act.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Welcome back. Coming up on 5 minutes past the hour. Tuesday night. I think we've got it all, you know, I'm not confused. It wasn't a confusing weekend. This is really Tuesday, and I know it's... You don't know how good that feels. I'm so easily confused. But I am Bob. That much we're certain of. And I am thrilled to death to have everybody on board. A couple of quick emails. Our pal, Peter from Tallahassee, says, Bob, you can't imagine how educational it is for many Southerners and West Coasters to hear a progressive Southern voice. They are often in shock. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Well, you know, there's a... It's okay, you know... There are lots of progressives in the South. Peter's in the South. Chris in Alabama. An email from our other pal David in South Carolina. We're all over the place. The Republicans just don't want you to know, and they would like us to behave and stay in our little ghettos and be quiet. You know, because otherwise, well, you know, it's just not fitting. You know, for us to be making a ruckus and us not being all wealthy and all. And speaking of David in South Carolina, he writes, this state, South Carolina, keeps sliding, yet every election the Republicans win more races. They're a microcosm for the U.S. with the Repigs controlling the House, Senate, and Executive. I think the state went for Shrub Jr. by about 20 points. Our average IQ is around 90, which may explain some of this. Jim Demented won by 10 points in the Senate, and he's been mentioned in the DeLay Abramoff scandal. Cabal. Here's the unemployment numbers for November. Notice where South Carolina stands. The state Repigs have a bill to allow oil drilling off the Myrtle Beach coast, by the way, he writes. 48th in unemployment for November 2005, Alaska, 7.0%. 49, South Carolina, 7.1, Mississippi and Louisiana. Louisiana, of course, at 12.4 because of Katrina. But look there, 49, South Carolina, 7.1. That Bush economic miracle hadn't quite caught up with South Carolina yet, has it? No, it hasn't. But that's okay because God will take care of it, right? Yeah. But I understand, David, truly I do. And my dad watches it on TV. My dad is a real rerun aficionado. And I just happened to walk through the room. He was watching a rerun of the Ted Danson vehicle that was on CBS, Becker. And there was a scene, the government had cut funding for a local homeless shelter, and they all poured out on the street, and they wound up in Becker's office, and Ted Danson plays a doctor. Maybe you know the show. And so, you know, he's curmudgeonly and cranky, but, you know, he's got a heart of gold, that kind of thing. So he goes and finds the bureaucrat in charge, opens the door, and there sits Henry Gibson from Laugh-In, who I always thought was just brilliant to begin with. And he's the little bureaucrat, and he says, you know, Becker says, look, I want you to get the funding restored for the homeless, and it ain't going to happen. Can't you help me? No, I can't help you. What do you mean you can't help me? And the monologue you got from Henry Gibson on this was just perfect. He says, look, let me explain something to you. We have an electorate that is so dumb now that they can't understand anything except the word tax cuts. So they vote for tax cuts, even though their taxes don't get cut and all the goodies go to the richest people in the country. That's all they understand is tax cuts. So they vote for tax cuts. So consequently, there's not enough money for your fire department or your police department. And God knows there is not enough money for poor people who happen to be homeless and need somewhere to sleep. So, no, I won't be helping you because we've got to cut taxes so we can have poorer schools and worse schools that can turn out another generation of students too stupid to understand anything more complicated than tax cuts. So, no, can't help you. And, like I said, Henry Gibson was never appreciated as he should have been. And I just, yep, that's it. And Agnes is looking at me going, wow. And that was in a comedy. And wow, isn't it true? Let's go back to the phones. Jim's been waiting with a question. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Oh, basically, they found one body up there.
They found one?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
So, apparently, things are not looking real good.
No, no, no.
So, they have found one already. It has to be identified. And they have 13 clergymen for each of the 13 family members that are co-located in that Baptist church across the street from the mine.
Mercy.
So that's the latest news on that. Now, come again on what he said in this hospital. Was this a civilian hospital he visited?
No, sir. No, sir. No, sir, Jim. This was the Brooke Army Medical Center in Texas.
Okay, treatment facility.
Yes.
And he went in there and...
Look, I got it. You want me to play it for you?
No.
Far better than I should try to paraphrase.
That's okay. That's fine. Well, let's forego that.
Okay.
He went into that place of honor,
uh-huh.
And he compared his being hit with a piece of brush or a cedar tree or whatever,
yeah,
to what these men had gone through, and effectively said to them that they would recover if he would, right?
That's pretty much it, yeah.
That son of a bitch.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't believe that. I can't believe any human being it would be that insensitive and that lacking in compassion or understanding of what these people have gone through because he signed his name to a piece of paper.
It's all just make-believe for him. He doesn't even live in reality anymore, Jim.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, this guy reminds me a lot of Nicholas II of Russia.
Yeah. I was thinking more Marie Antoinette, but,
well,
you know, that's just me.
Second, I think is a pretty good, you know, because basically he's simply inviting ruin upon his own head and the heads of other people and innocent heads as well.
Well, but see, he lives. I mean, he really is the boy in a bubble. He doesn't. You're talking about concepts, Jim. You're talking about concepts that are so far above that wicked little man. For you to explain that what he did in that place of honor was evil incarnate, for you to try to explain that to him would be like you trying to explain the general theory of relativity to a baby in the crib.
Well, I could do some simple math and measurement for him. How many pints of blood are in the human body?
11.
How much?
11, isn't it?
I thought it was more like 6.
Okay, let me ask the doctor over here. How many pints of blood in the human body? Quick, your license depends on it, dear. I thought it was... Okay, it's not 11. Okay, so we'll go with your number.
Okay, you take 6 times. How many people have been killed over 2,200, 2,100?
Yeah, well, that's just us.
Well, I'll tell you, that would fill up a few gallon drums, wouldn't it?
2 or 3. Yeah.
Well, I wonder if those were taken and poured over his head, he might get an idea of what he's done. Not to mention the pints of blood that have been shed by the Iraqi civilians unnecessarily.
That would be 33,000 gallons.
That's a small ocean, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's at least a good-sized swimming pool or a baptismal font.
Into a military treatment facility where these men are
trying to recuperate.
In many cases, and mentally scarred for life, and paraplegics, quadriplegics, whatever.
And makes a joke.
Amputees, and tries to make a joke about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this man...
Well, he has divested himself of any claim upon the good thoughts of any human being on planet Earth. Let's put it bluntly, Jim.
Well, I separate him from the company of any decent human being in my own mind. I'm sure God does, too.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted to know, but I'm
all
sorry
right.
to give you the bad news.
I appreciate the update, though, Jim. Truly, I do.
On CNN right now, one body found in West Virginia mine, and no word about the other miners at this point.
Oh, God, I fear the worst.
All right, I did too.
Take
Thank
care.
You.
Bye now. And let's see. Line 2, Clyde is with us from our pals at WD40.com. Hey, Clyde, how you doing? You're head on.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
Doing very good.
Sorry about the connection. I'm on a cell phone here.
That's okay.
Basically, just wanted to call and let you and your listeners know that there's a bunch of people out here in Kansas that are really concerned about your miners, and we hope for the best. You know, it's not looking good right now, but, you know, you can't give up hope right now.
No, we have to hope for as long as there's any hope to be had, Clyde.
Well, you know, that's a very dangerous job, you know, and, you know, normally I would call and talk to you about politics, but, hello. Hello.
Yeah, we're here.
I thought we got disconnected.
No.
No, normally I would call and talk to you about politics, but basically this ain't a time right now, in my opinion, to really talk other than, you know, to really hope for your people there.
I appreciate that. We sincerely do, Clyde.
You know, all you people, you got our support. If there's anything we can do to help you out, that's what we're here for.
Well, just remember when you go to turn those lights on, or more importantly, turn them off, Clyde. Just remember where the electricity's coming from for a whole bunch of the nation.
Oh yeah, I understand. You know, where I live, I'm like a mile and a half from a nuclear power plant called Wolf Creek.
Oh yeah.
You know, so, you know, if something goes down there, you know, we're all screwed, you know, so
big time.
We're in the breadbasket of America, and, you know, we feed the world, and you guys, you supply the world with coal, and, you know, it's not a good thing that's what's going on right now. And I, you know, to get on a little bit of politics, is that the guy that's in charge of mine safety, from what I understand, isn't he a Bush crony now?
Yeah, he's another brownie.
You know, he's another brownie. So, in other words, we've got another incompetent in the government that's supposed to be protecting us, you know, from the world on Terra.
Right.
You know. And they ain't doing a damn thing for things that are going on at home.
Clyde, it'd be funny if it wasn't so cotton-picking sad, you know?
Oh, I'm telling you, you know, I come from a union family, and although I'm not union myself, you know, I've always believed in the union, the credo,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, what's going on with this administration, you know, it started with Reagan, but, you know, it really hasn't hit its peak until this guy.
Yeah, this is, they thought, and, you know, it's the same kind of thinking we had, Clyde, with Social Security and everything else. They thought that with the Bush administration, they finally had the chance for the kill shot.
Oh, yeah, you know, they've been trying to shoot down FDR ever since FDR you know, was in power. You know, I mean, just it's incredible, you know, that we've got all these people in Washington right now that basically, in my opinion, they've forgotten what this country is all about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's worth remembering, and I try to remind folks once in a while, if you go back to the actual creation of the Social Security Act, when that bill passed Congress, both the Senate and the House, not one single Republican voted in favor of it. Not one.
Well, to them, it was an entitlement program instead of...
No, it was communism, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was the big red menace, of course. But at the time, wasn't Russia like an ally? At the time that it got passed, you know, I'm not real good on that particular part of history, but I know in World War II that Russia was actually our ally.
Absolutely. We were bosom buddies.
And people tend to forget that, you know, we had people in this country weaving blankets and stuff like that to send to the Russian army, you know. But
absolutely, and British and American warships guarded Russian convoys on the Murmansk Run.
Oh, yeah, but they were the big red menace because we had a group of people that said, well, their form of government wasn't any better than ours. Now, believe me, I'm not a communist.
No.
I'm somewhat of a socialist. I believe that, you know, I am my brother's keeper. You know,
right.
I'm here to help make not only my life better, but my brother's life better.
Right.
You know.
Sure.
But, you know, the way these guys are going, you know, and, you know, I hate to really say this, but I think that with what's going on in the mind right now is just, you know, it's fascism at its finest because it's corporatism.
Exactly.
Now, you know, they don't give a damn about the working man. They worry about the bottom line. You know, if you notice with the Republican Party, they always talk macroeconomics. They never talk about, you know, the living wage, how it's been stagnant for the last 5 years. They're talking about corporate profits going up.
Sure.
You know, but, you know, yeah, I'm off on a tangent.
That's okay, Clyde.
I talk to you about, you know, and, you know, I kind of go off on a tangent on my politics. But
that's anyway. All right. And I enjoy your tangents at WD40.com, too, Clyde.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, it all comes from the heart, but, you know, that's not really why I called. I just basically have been hearing about this story all day, and, you know, I know you're there in West Virginia. I don't know how that mine is to you guys, but I know that you got a lot of miners out there.
Yep.
You know that there's a bunch of people in Kansas that are hoping and praying for a good thing to come out.
That warms my heart, Clyde, it reminds me of the fact that, you know, this isn't, like I said earlier, this isn't the homeland, this is the Union, and, you know, it makes you feel American to know, and proud to be an American, to know that there are people, you know, thinking and feeling the way you do in far-off Kansas, and I mean that in all sincerity.
Well, it comes from the heart, like I said, you know, I come from a union family. My dad was a union president of his UFCW local, you know, and, you know, the only way we're going to get through this is we got to stick together. And
absolutely.
You know, and, you know, what miners, you know, just to use them as an example, you know, the dangers that these guys go through without any oversight by the government to make sure that these guys have a safe work environment. I mean, you can only get so safe in a mine. I mean,
that's, well, yeah,
natural. But, you know, everything, possibly this could have been the most safest mine in all God's creation, you know. I don't know this. I don't know that area. I don't know that for mine.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the fact of it is, you know, you got government that is giving more to the corporation and taking away from the worker. That is really it's the downfall of the American society, in my opinion.
Well, you're right, Clyde, and the sad fact is that the one thing the CEOs don't understand is ultimately it will be their downfall too. But you know, it's the old story of the grasshopper and the ant, and these CEOs are grasshoppers, and they don't understand that winter's going to come, and they don't understand that if they don't have you know the workers out there, there's not going to be anything to support them. It sure is good to talk to you, though, Clyde. I hope we'll hear from you again soon. All right.
All right. You take care. Love you, Agnes. You all take care now.
Love Thanks. You too, Claude. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And keep rolling. Wayne's been waiting. Hey, Wayne, you're head on.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing okay.
That was a great call, man. That was a great call.
Yeah, heartwarming.
Yeah, and I like to hear from Kansas and other places, you know.
Well, and again, Wayne, it goes to the fact that we have been so thoroughly propagandized that it's almost illegal to think that there are Clydes and Wallys and WD40.com out there in Kansas. You know, because Kansas is a red state, man.
Yeah, well, that's exactly. But see, what a lot of people don't realize is it's red only, and I don't know if this is particularly true of Kansas, but an awful lot of red states are red just a little bit.
Yeah, pinkish.
Enough to get them, you know, so that the other people could claim it.
Right.
You know, I mean, recent polls, and I mean recent in the last few years and stuff, show the American people to be much more progressive than the Republicans would like to think that.
Well, you know, and you're absolutely right, Wayne, and I think part of the reason that we have the Rush, part of the reason for creating, because he didn't create himself, part of the reason for creating people like Rush Limbaugh was to try to continue to pull the wool over the American people's eyes and keep them, you know, because every day it's, you know, my friends, this is a conservative nation. You know, bug spray, it is not.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't. That's, you know, God, I had a little... 65% of the people say the government should guarantee health insurance for everyone, even if it means raising taxes.
Yeah, that's not exactly conservative.
Yeah, that ain't real, really on your side, guys. I hate to tell you that.
Yeah, and you're not going to hear that on Flush or Hannity or any of those creeps.
It's Jim Hightower.
Yeah.
What I want for Christmas. And it goes on. He wants a real Democratic Party, and so do I.
Oh, boy. That'd be better than a new BB gun.
Yes, it would. Yes. And it won't put your eye out. Ah, you know? God. But listen, I was, you know, I don't know what to say about the miners. You know, our prayers are with them, and, you know, miracles do happen. Now, I know it looks real grim and stuff, but, you know, we'll have to carry on. And what I called about was, another attack on working people in the great city of Beckley.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What happened?
Mountain State University has got a grant for $3.9 million from the U.S. Department of Human Resources and Service Administration. And they want to build a health technology tower. So they talk about the project, and at the bottom of the project says, this project is not subject to prevailing wage.
Oh, God. Here we go again.
You know. So what we're going to build a health technology tower with a bunch of people that can't afford health insurance. You know, so that, if we develop something really technological in our new tower.
You can't have it.
You can't have it, you know. But would you build our buildings? I mean,
yeah, sure. Oh my God!
And
God,
you know what
God.
That means, Bob? That, you know, $3.9 million is—it's not going to be any cheaper, whether they pay prevailing wage or not.
No.
You know, the only difference is that whoever gets it, whatever
the contractor will get a little.
It makes a lot more money, and the workers get a third of what they're worth.
Yeah.
That's what that means.
Yeah, boy, I tell you, I want to, and, you know, I got little kids. I sure do want to send them to study in a health tower that was built with possibly incompetent, labor.
Listen, it wouldn't surprise me at all that they'll have illegal oil. Well, I'm going to go up there and embarrass them into donut propelling. That's all there is to
it. Well, that's what you got to do with some of these people.
They don't leave you any choice. What do? You try to be nice to them and say, well, look, you know, here studies show that, but they smile at you and then do whatever they want anyway. So, yeah. I'm going to embarrass them. I guess I don't know what else to do. You know, go up there with a big sign. Shame on you, man. You're going to build a tire with,
Yeah.
That's like building fancy hotels with people that can never afford to come there. Right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, this is worse.
God. I mean, the hospital, Raleigh General Hospital is being built by union people.
Mm-hmm.
All union, guaranteed wages, guaranteed health insurance, guaranteed pensions. You know, that's what Mountain State University should be doing, too. So that's what I called about.
Who's in charge there? I mean,
Polk, is Polk still president?
I honestly don't know, but
I think that's how you pronounce his name.
Hey,
I don't know,
hey.
But I'm gonna. You know, now I've talked to. I've talked to their. I'm trying. Their something development person, because see, occasionally they get a grant where there's no question. They're going to pay prevailing wage because we're going to win, you know. But then they get these ones from the federal government, and they try to say that, well, it's not state's money, but, you know, the state prevailing wage law says public funds.
Yeah.
It doesn't say state money or federal money. It's just public funds.
Right.
And the only monies that government have are public funds.
The way I see it.
Yeah.
Well, let me just ask you this. I mean, we know, and just to flesh it out for folks a little bit, prevailing wage is defined and codified in the Davis-Bacon Act. And we know that the first thing, you know, before they started worrying about getting people out of New Orleans or getting people out of the floodwaters or rescuing human beings, the first thing George Bush thought about was repealing Davis-Bacon for Katrina taxpayer-funded work, right?
He issued an executive order.
And we know from the article that Chris cited to us earlier that George Bush falls asleep at night hating Davis-Bacon. So taking all of that together, when the Department of Health and Human Services or whatever, when they generate one of these grants like this, how are they allowed to just at one fell swoop of a pen declare that a congressional act is not valid for that grant? How do they get away with that?
With 80 million lawyers and that many different interpretations, Davis-Bacon does not apply to everything. That's their argument.
Yeah.
They've been holding up some water resource bill for years, the Republicans have, because the Democrats insist, well, it's got to be prevailing wage. And they say, no, it doesn't. The only thing that applied. You know, this is new legislation, so it doesn't apply to the old prevailing wage law, to the old Davis-Bacon. You know, that's expanding Davis-Bacon. That's how they,
frame it. Well, my head hurts.
Huh?
My head hurts.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's what they do. And, if you remember, they were going to build that educational mall.
Yeah, the educational Taj Mahal.
Too.
Some yeah.
guy thought he was going to do that.
Yeah.
And we won that one. And I think we could win this one, too. Why don't instead of putting that in there, say, the lawyers tell us that prevailing wage doesn't apply to this job, but we have decided that we're going to use the state prevailing wage anyway because it's good for our community. Well, that'd be a pretty good advertisement, wouldn't it?
That'd make you look real good.
Well, yeah. I mean, like maybe even care.
Yeah, like no, that's real. That's
money.
Yeah, that's white hat on the white horse material.
God,
you optimist. Hey, I think Agnes has a question for you.
Myself.
I know.
I can't help myself.
Now, Agnes wants to ask you something, Wayne.
What's that?
Hey, Wayne.
Yes.
How would everybody feel if they refused to pay prevailing wage for their bridges all across America to be built?
Well, exactly.
Could you imagine going across the bridge and think about, little Doogie Howser out there putting together this bridge like a Lego bridge?
There are how many illegal aliens that, you know.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, if you're a Republican, you have to hate illegal aliens.
Thank you.
Yes.
No, I understand her point.
Well, you know, I mean, listen.
This this bridge built by poorly paid workers, travel at your own risk.
Yeah, exactly. And go live where, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, Mountain State University, we gotta wake them up a little bit. Gotta give them a reality check. So.
Do I smell a picket somewhere in the offing?
Yeah, I mean, if you hear rumors or some, well, you know, sometimes my pickets turn into one man operation.
Well, I know.
You know, but that's okay.
That's okay. We can, hey, look, we can always call the university president a weasel.
Yeah, I don't want to call anybody. You know,
No, I'm kidding. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do know what you're talking about. You know, well, I mean, that's more or less what I'll be doing anyway. The whole damn it doesn't make sense, and it's, you know. Well, like I say all the time, people have got to start standing up. I mean, this is, you know, everything, all the problems have to be solved. How do you solve all the problems? Give the working people less.
Yeah, boy, that sounds like
answer to everything.
That's a recipe for success in Bushmerica,
well,
Wayne.
Yeah, and I mean, now, you know, they don't need health insurance. They're not going to live that long.
I mean,
they won't give them that much food, you know.
God.
If they don't eat that much, they won't live that long.
Yeah, it's like you imagine George Bush getting out of bed in the morning and looking at Dick Cheney and say, "Can we screw a worker today, Uncle Dick?"
Well, I mean, they got to think like that. That's what they do. I need another billion or something. I don't know. I don't understand these people.
No, not in the least. That's because they're better than us and smarter than us, and, you know, we're not supposed to understand. We're just supposed to do as we're told.
Yeah. But it's fun rebelling. You know, I think we are.
Yeah.
You know, that's what the Democrats, well, that's what Democrats are looking now for, is rebels. That's who we need. We need some rebels. We need somebody with some guts to be able to stand up and tell these people, wait a damn minute.
Who in the hell do you think you are?
Yeah, exactly. I told you that story. A guy in an office building I was building, and I'm going to do the suspended ceilings. And he came in and told me, here's how I want you to do suspended ceilings. And when you're dealing with a bunch of different offices and stuff, it takes time to lay that out so that everything flows.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy just, he said, I want you to start over there. I said, no, I already figured it out. I'm going to start here, and I'm going to come out, and this, you know, the hallway will look good. And no, he said, I want you to start here, and I said, I'm not going to start there. And he said, do you realize who the bleepity bleep I am? And I said, my question to you is, who the bleepity bleep do you think you are? I don't work there anymore. I got transferred to a different
And their ceiling's probably screwed up.
Well, I hope so. So, listen.
But, you give a really good example there. And I'm sorry, but it does come back to what's going on in Upshur County. Those poor dudes, I don't care if the gas was roiling out of the mouth of that mine and you could see it coming. If they said go in, those poor dudes couldn't say, boss, I ain't going in. Not if they wanted to be employed the next day.
You know, obviously there was a gas problem at that mine.
Yeah.
You know, why did you shut, if you're so anxious to start mining coal, why did you shut the operation down? Why aren't you paying people, you know, over the holidays, which means, ooh, double time or something, you know, to get air in there and to alleviate this problem, you know.
Well, you know, but if you pay that guy double time for New Year's Day, that's, you know, that's probably the cost of a half a tin of caviar for Wilbur Ross there, Wayne. And you know, you wouldn't want to be getting into his caviar habit.
Now, there's another thing. Anybody that could eat that, something's got to be wrong. Have you ever seen that?
Seen it. I've eaten it. It's nasty. It's nasty.
Not me, brother. You know, I don't know how many Serbs have eaten caviar. I'm sure there's quite a few, but this ain't going to be one. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, save yours for the next guy.
Right.
All right, Wayne. Thanks so much, man.
Okay, bro.
Later.
Bye.
Oh, let's take a break. This is Head On.
Yeah. Hey, friends. Eric Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines. But there's something else that I'm into even more. Taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
About 19 minutes before the hour, head on. I'm Bob Kincaid. What a wild ride this has been tonight. Grim news with regard to the mining disaster. But by the same token, and you know, I'm not blowing smoke at anybody. It feels good to hear from other parts of the country and folks, you know, saying, you know, look, we're all West Virginians right now. The governor of Oklahoma, and, you know, politics be damned. I don't know what his politics are, but his state is on fire. I was communicating by email with Bart Kopp the other day, and he said, yeah, pretty quiet out here, too. We're just sitting around listening to the grass burn. Oklahoma's on fire, and when the governor of Oklahoma was interviewed, he said, the first thing I want to do is express our sympathies and our prayers and our hopes and our concerns for those families in West Virginia. And about 2 hours after I said it last night on this show, Governor Manchin here in West Virginia said, you know, we're all family in West Virginia. And there's a lot of truth in that. Our friend Toby writes to say that the blast apparently occurred to the permanent ventilation seal deep in the mine. The International Coal Group executive at the scene says it's a nightmare. The body that was found, there's no condition. They won't talk about it. It was the The body was apparently found in one of the man trips. That's the vehicle that carries them into the mine. And there were no traces of the other 12. And that people are passing out in the church across the way from the mine. You know, if Dear Leader shows up here and says that he fell in a hole one time, but he got out, like he said that he got into combat with a cedar tree, but he won out. Yeah, I don't know. What are we supposed to think? What in the hell are we supposed to think? I should have spent the better part of the program tonight on Jack Abramoff. And God knows we could have. But for all my intentions of making this a national or, as our new friend Brad in Mainz, Germany notes, an international program. Okay. And our friend Sue in Wales and our friend Stephen in England. Sometimes things like this happen. And I can't help it, and I hope I don't put anybody off. Man, we're West Virginians. We're just West Virginians. And to hear, there was a press conference that my wife called to my attention earlier this evening, where someone referred to up the holler. Now, we know exactly what that means around here. We speak Appalachian English. And it's one of the beauties of Appalachian English, the stretched out O's and the long I's, like our friend David in Tennessee noted. And linguists have said this is the closest you're going to get to the English that Shakespeare spoke. I don't know if there's any truth in that, but it's kind of romantic and sweet. But someone referred in this press conference to up the holler, and one of the news media types said, "Up the holler, what does that mean?" And someone said, "Well, you know, that's country speak. Country talk." Daggum. Conflar, nasted, blag, staggin', blue nose. You know, that's just the way those people talk. Up the holler. Let's go back to the phones one more time. Gary is with us. Hey, Gary, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing good. They're as well as can be.
Well, as usual, I'm going to call and disagree with you.
That's all right.
We're one big family in West Virginia.
Well, we try.
I used to believe that. I really did. And I don't believe it anymore. I think we're a state that's divided. In fact, it was kind of a painful thing for me to realize that. But I just don't believe that anymore.
Well, why?
But let me put it this way. I've been a lot of places, and I've met a lot of people. Some of the most utterly corrupt, rotten people I ever met in my life were from the backwoods of West Virginia.
Well, nobody... Hey, look, I said we're family. I didn't say we were necessarily always nice.
Well, I mean, this stereotype we got of, you know, backwoods country people always being good, honest people and all that.
No.
It's not true.
You're disagreeing with me? I never said that, Gary.
Well, you know what I'm saying.
I mean, there are hollers you can go up and where you'll get they'll kneecap you and then kick your butt for being short.
Well, I tell you what, I've been in places in West Virginia where I believe the mafia could come down here and learn a few lessons. I'm serious about that.
But we're proud of that. That's part of that mountaineers are always free thing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I guess, but I don't have money yet to bulletproof my car when I say it. You know.
God, you're cantankerous.
Well, I mean, I'm telling the truth now.
Well, sure.
I mean, in fact, we're famous for that. I mean, especially some parts of the state, like over around Logan and all that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Don Blankenship country. I believe that's where he got that from, really.
Just born mean?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I really do feel sorry for those people up there. It's a very, very dangerous job. It's a job I wouldn't do.
Well, Gary, it's a very, very dangerous job, and it's a job that doesn't need to be made any more dangerous than it has to be, and that's what these clowns did. And I'm not talking about the miners. I'm talking about the company men.
Well, you know, I can't sit here and talk to you intelligently about mining coal because I don't know that much about it, but it's my understanding that a person they call a fire boss is supposed to go in the mine first to make sure it's safe to go in there.
That's right.
And I don't know what happened up there, whether or not that happened or not.
Well, I heard some mention of the fire boss going in, but again, you gotta remember, Gary. This is, and I don't mean to beat a dead. Don't use that phrase. I don't mean to work something over beyond its beyond its need, but the fact of the matter is, this was a non-union operation.
Yeah.
And if they were work, you know, if safety was just a pro forma bunch of hooey on a union operation, it would not be tolerated. They'd dump out their water and not participate. But these men did not have that opportunity. They didn't have that luxury, and they didn't have that protection. And it has cost at least one life.
Well, you know, I'm pro-union, but I don't think necessarily this disaster was linked to lack of a union. And I'll tell you why. It's because I don't believe these mine owners and bosses want a disaster like this any more than anybody does.
They don't want it, but it's not that they want it, Gary. It's that they don't care, okay? The simple fact of the matter is the inspection of that mine, an 11-week inspection, ended on December the 22nd.
Yeah.
And at the end of that inspection, they were issued 46 separate health and safety violations.
But what were the nature of the violations? Because I've heard that, and I know for a fact, just the business I'm in, you can be cited and cited and cited for everything, and really when you add it all up, it doesn't add up to nothing. I mean, it could be like, hey, there's a pop can on the floor, we're writing you up for it.
Okay, well, you know, what I've got here, it involves steps for safeguarding against roof falls, you know, that's faulty bolting, whatever, the plan to control methane and breathable dust.
Well, it could be very, very serious, but, you know, it would take somebody who really knew. I mean, and that wouldn't be you and I, unless you know more about mine than I know you know. They would really look at that and say, hey, this is really serious stuff, or, you know, really it's just a bunch of hooey, you know what I'm saying?
Well, but the thing is, nitpicking hooey, you know, the reason these regulations are the way they are, or supposed to be, Gary, is that this nitpicking hooey can get you killed.
Well, it can, but, you know, like I met a guy one time that went to California in a big truck. You know, I drive a big truck for a living, and
right.
He charged him like $300 because a marker light was out on his trailer. And really, that is nothing. I mean, if all his lights were out and he was driving away, yeah, but I mean, if just one little light, they want to charge him that kind of money.
I understand, Gary, but consider 46 separate violations from December 22nd to December 31st, 9 days.
Well, I would still like to see the nature of the violations. And
well, so would I.
And someone who really knew about mining, whether it could say, hey, you know, this is serious or isn't. And I know you've got a lot of listeners that are miners out there. So, you know, once the nature of these violations are made public, maybe they could comment on it.
Well, you know, they ran out, and the first thing they did, oh, well, there was a thunderstorm. It was the thunder's fault. It was the lightning's fault.
Well,
maybe that's the case, but you know we've had commentary from one certified underground mining electrician who says you protect against that kind of stuff.
Well, that's what you need is people that are qualified to comment on that. I mean, I couldn't say one way or the other. I mean, I know that static electricity can do things, and that rises during thunderstorms, but.
And a lowering of barometric pressure.
Fire boss go in there and check for methane levels and all that, then, you know, something like that probably shouldn't be an issue.
Right.
I mean, but, you know, again, I'm going to sit here and tell you, I'm not qualified to comment on it. Maybe, maybe not.
Now, I understand that, but the fact remains that this was, you know, you remember when the auction and sale of Cannleton went down? You know, down here at Cedar Grove.
Yeah.
Or Smithers, or whatever. You remember when that went down? The same group went partners with Massey on taking over that outfit as bought out this group up here in Upshur County.
Yeah.
And they are not known for their safety. They're not known for their concern for their workers. They are known for their ability to make a fast buck.
Well, we know what we've had in this country for the last 20, 30 years, you know. These corporate, you know, dollar mongers, they've just come out and they come in and find a fast way to gut a company, make a big buck, and then leave, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like that one guy out there in Washington when they went out there to shut that sawmill down.
Yeah.
He told all the workers who were assembled there, it was like 1,200 workers, that he was just cutting their jobs. And he said, well, he says, you know what the golden rule is all about. He who makes the gold has got the gold makes the rule.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that guy had the nerve to stand up in front of 1,200 people and tell them that. He must have had, you know, like a presidential security detail to get him out of there alive.
Well, it's... I don't know what's going to come in Upshur County, but I bet you those executives will be gone as quick as they got there. And maybe they won't stick their foot in their mouth because they got Dear Leader out there doing it for them.
Well, I'm glad to see that Joe Manchin's on the scene. You know, I believe the guy's genuine and real. I like him. You know, I'm a conservative, but still he's a Democrat, and I don't like everything he's done. I think he is kind of pro-big business.
Well, he's come across very well on the TV.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think old Joe's got a great future ahead of him. Hey, there is one thing I wanted to ask you about, though. I know you got to go here pretty quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
What's your comments on this Turnpike toll increase?
I think I can't agree with it. You know, you're an over-the-road truck driver. I'd rather you guys got the increase than Joe going to work, but, you know. You know,
I mean, eventually everybody pays for it because these companies, they just pass the cost right on to the consumer.
Well, there's a certain amount of that is true. Frankly, I don't believe, you know, this is because I'm all crazy and commie and leftist and stuff. I don't believe it ought to cost you to drive a single four-lane. I don't believe it ought to cost you, you know, outright on the road to drive a single road in West Virginia. That's what the tax base is about, isn't it?
Well, I agree 100%. You know, and the deal was, of course, there are people alive that still remember this, that once the turnpike was paid for, the tolls were going to come off. And, of course, the people in the know knew that was a fantasy way back when. But my thing is, with the amount of money that they bring in each year, they ought to have enough reserve money to pay for any kind of special projects like this, the Shady Spring interchange they want to put in and all that. Are they trying to tell us that every dime they bring in from all those tolls, it goes simply just for maintenance and operation? And I don't believe that.
Well, it's debt service, Gary. That's what it's going for. It's not going for maintenance and operation. It's going for debt service. Because the first time they paid the turnpike off, they turned right around and went in debt again so they could keep the tolls on it, and then they used the tolls for the debt service, and that's where we are.
So in other words, we're really just being flim-flammed.
Well, we're paying for the caviar for the bond dealers on Wall Street. Let's put it that way.
Well, I see.
Whether that constitutes flim-flam in your book is another matter entirely.
Well, what's it constitute in your book?
Flim flam.
Okay, we're on the same page then.
Hey, Gary, good to hear from you. Hope you have a great new year.
Hey, thanks a lot, Bob.
Stay safe.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye.
Okay, great show, everybody. Thanks so much. And thank you for all of your expressions of concern and support. Somewhere in me, there's some sort of a John Kennedy, Ich bin ein West Virginian thing. That's what I think I've heard tonight. And it's good to know, because I don't want to buy into the Republican myth of a nation divided against itself that cannot stand. We are citizens of the Union. And just for future reference, do me a favor, anybody, I don't care if you're talking about the Department of Security, I don't ever want to hear the word homeland on this program again. We are the Union. This is the Union. The thing that Abraham Lincoln was so worked up about. The preservation of the Union. Okay? Okay. My lovely wife Agnes produced the show tonight. You know that. You talked to her, some of you did. Isn't she sweet? Brian Reznor announced the program. Randy Kerbway engineered our studio setup. And our dear friend, Ben Birch, maintains the archives for this program, as well as making it possible for you to get the stream each and every night, and you never get a bill, so remember Ben, please. The show is brought to you every night by the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Remember? You do.